Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description.
Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome to Going In Raw Countout, the only pro wrestling countdown show here at youtube.com/Steve and Larson.
We're also available wherever fine podcasts are in the audio realm. Be sure to hit the subscribe or download button. It really helps out the show.
Yes.
We're also available on the Patreon at patreon.com/Steven Larson. If you want to financially support the show, we have plenty of reward tiers you can choose from. $1, $5. We're coming up with one coming up in like a week or so. That's going to be a $200,000 Patreon mark.
That's right.
Yeah. Find out what that's all about come June 1st. Anyways, we're also on prowrestlingtees.com/goinginraw. You can get this shirt at New Japan's Pro Wrestling Tee Shop. I'm waiting for my Congress Under Mecha Santa shirt to show up. That should be any day now because I think I ordered them on back-to-back days during that last sale. So I'll be wearing that soon to support.
That is a good-looking shirt.
Going In Raw. Absolutely. You have a new one on the way, don't you?
Yeah.
The new design guru.
That's what you're calling me.
What's your hesitation? Why can't you just accept that compliment?
Oh, I'm not denying it.
You're not denying that you are the new design
guru?
No,
I'm not denying the compliment. I think it's very nice.
Okay, good.
But I don't consider myself a guru.
You should. So anyways, we're not here to talk about design gurus, Larson. What are we here to talk about?
Surprising world title victories now at Backlash. In fairly surprising fashion, Jinder Mahal won the WWE Championship for Randy Orton.
Yeah.
So, of course, that got us to thinking about other world title wins that were pretty surprising.
We gave Jinder like a 0.1 to 2% chance.
By the time the match actually happened, we bumped that up to 20%.
Yeah, but still, it's overcoming 80% odds against you is pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty surprising.
Yes.
Here are 10 other surprise title changes.
Yes.
Number 10.
10.
Seth Rollins at WrestleMania 31.
Yeah, we were there.
We were there. It was very shocking because I literally stayed true to my word and left during the open of the Brock Lesnar. Actually, it was the close of the match before that, preceding that.
Yeah, you went to the merchandise stand.
To get my merchandise because I was like, you know what? I know what this Brock Lesnar Roman Reigns match is going to be like.
So it didn't really enter our mind that it was a possibility that a Money in the Bank cashing could happen at WrestleMania because it had never happened before.
It had never, ever happened before. So, of course, Seth Rollins at Money in the Bank prior to WrestleMania on June something or another. I didn't write that down. Won Money in the Bank, and he held on to it for, geez, I mean, that's almost a year. I mean, that's, you know, 10 months or so.
Yeah.
So he was Mr. Money in the Bank for a very long time.
Yes, he was.
They used that as part of his angle because it was only shortly before that, I think it was like a couple weeks before that, that he actually turned heel against the Shield, or he turned on the Shield, joined the Authority. Like I said, we were there. You know, we all thought that this was going to be sort of Roman Reigns' coronation as top dog in his yard.
Yeah, this is how I've described the feeling in the stadium that day. That there was this point in the match well, the match starts out with Brock dominating Reigns.
Yeah.
Reigns, bit by bit, starts to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets to the point where they're kind of on equal footing, and we feel like, uh-oh, the tide has turned. This is where Reigns, because even back then, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever it was, nobody liked Roman Reigns. Except Vince.
That's right.
Pretty much. He came out, he got booed
a
lot.
That's right, yeah, he did.
And so they're both down the mat, and we're like, oh, great. Roman's going to get up.
Let me ask you something.
Superman punch, three spears, win the belt.
The people have only grown to even dislike him more.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't as bad as it is now. It was still bad.
But it's worse now.
It's worse now.
It's definitely worse
now. Yeah.
Anyway, so I think the mood in the stadium was generally, oh, gosh, here it comes. This is where Reigns wins. And then Seth music hits, and I think everybody kind of looked at each other like, this is the way out of this. This is the way where Roman isn't winning the belt. That's something we actually like is going to
win. Okay, but hold on. For me, I know for me, I can speak for me personally, it was... oh, God, this is a way out. Please let them do it. Please let them do it. Because you're looking at, he's facing two other guys who are booked to the moon strong.
Yes.
Just absolutely massively strong. And so it was completely within the realm of possibility that he was just going to blow this opportunity.
Yeah.
And so, but of course it didn't happen. And they choreographed this.
They put a little
well.
Doubt in your mind that Seth was going to walk out of there as champion.
It was like, I mean, honestly, it was horror movie tension. When he comes running down there, you're running in this pit of like beasts and you're with him on this. It's like, he's the heel. I mean, we were both Rollins fans anyway.
Yeah.
But he's the heel and it's like, oh, he's going to make this cool now.
Yeah.
But it's like, he's actually going to do it. And he's like, he's got the ref and he's all freaking out. And the ramp is forever long.
Yeah, and he's sprinting down.
He's sprinting down. It was, I want to say it was Chioda that was with him.
Oh, I don't remember.
I don't remember which ref it was. But he was running too. And he gets in there. And what's the sequence of events? Because it ended with him. It ended with...
So there was a bit of a back and forth. Lesnar gets Rollins up for an F5. Lesnar kind of turns around because he's kind of in the corner, I believe. Roman spears
yeah,
him.
Yeah.
So Rollins gets out of the F5 attempt. As Reigns is getting up from the spear, Rollins gives him a curb stop.
It was beautifully done.
And gets the pin on him.
And, of course, this is after Rollins had already lost to Randy Orton with a beautiful RKO out of nowhere. And so we kind of figured, oh, okay, well, he's done. I mean, I don't know why we didn't think that this is even a possibility.
Well, we weren't as tuned in as we are now.
I guess not. Now we've been there, done everything. The state of euphoria we were all in leaving the arena, the stadium that night, was next level in terms of wrestling euphoria.
I dare say unparalleled so far in terms of our live experiences.
Oh, for sure.
Live event experiences.
In terms of like that moment, that was the highest I've ever felt off the moment. In terms of like total encapsulating nights, the PWG show we went to was like... just a really, really great wrestling crowd to be a part of.
Probably the second closest thing I can think of is when we went to NXT Brooklyn and Shinsuke won the title from Joe.
Oh, yeah. That was huge, too. So, I still can play this back in my head. Like, the beat of his music kicking in and his name... because, that screen, that Titantron
gigantic.
Is massive. And even from the seats that we had, which were good seats, but they weren't, like, on the field or anything, it was, I mean, I'll be honest, those, like, I actually much prefer those seats, the ones we had this year on the field, simply because you get an overview of everything. And so sitting there and then seeing his giant name come up.
And we both looked at each other like this.
It was jaw-dropping.
Yeah.
It was absolutely jaw-dropping. I get, like, sort of goosebumps even thinking about it, like reliving it. That was an absolute shocker. Very surprising.
Yes.
And, of course, it wasn't the most even world title. It was booked weaker than I would have liked.
Yeah, he was booked as a weak heel, but he played the role exceptionally well. Held the belt for about 7 months before he blew out his knee at a house show.
My only qualm with the way he was booked was the way he would win matches. Because his matches were always stellar.
Yeah.
It was just, man, can we get a non-J&J security finish here, please?
Yeah.
Or non-Kane finish.
Yeah.
Number nine.
Nine.
Mikey Whipwreck.
So this one isn't necessarily so much... just the nature of the win itself being a surprise, but just kind of his career arc.
Yeah.
in ECW to begin with, because he started out as a volunteer member of the ring crew. And then, you know,
free.
I guess
he didn't even get paid.
He just he and I think some others just wanted an opportunity to
bounce around the ring before
And after shows, and then Joey Styles took notice of him, brought him to the attention of Paul Heyman, and from there Paul Heyman signed him on, and he started out as a jobber. But then it seemed like, you know, he was a much smaller competitor than a lot of people on ECW. And, you know, he quickly became an underdog that the ECW arena could really root for.
It was kind of, he was kind of a case of just the ultimate, like living vicariously through another person, because the dude was not, he was just the most regular looking guy. And they played that in some degrees to comedic effect, or a lot to comedic effect. Because, for example, I believe him and Cactus Jack won the tag team titles. Yes. And there's a couple of great promo, at least one great promo, where Cactus Jack is talking about, you know, all the violence and whatnot. And Mikey is just not into it at all. Like, he's not interested in any of it. So he was like, in that respect, he was kind of like a hesitant champion. But he would somehow, some way, find a way to win when it kind of mattered.
Yeah, because as he
started, he won the television championship.
Yes. And then, as you mentioned, tag team titles with Cactus Jack. And his push kind of reached its peak when he won a number one contender match for the ECW world title. And he had a ladder match on the October 31st, 1994 edition of Hardcore Television.
A brutal match.
Yeah, against the Sandman, who was champion at the time. Ladder match. Yeah, it was pretty brutal.
And it was like, there wasn't, there, he didn't, it's not like he won thanks to shenanigans.
No, he, there wasn't, he didn't use a whippersnapper to win.
Yeah.
He hit, the Sandman a few times with the ladder. One, a pretty stiff shot to the head that busted the Sandman open.
Oh yeah, he was busted open.
Oh yeah. And then, Whipwreck laid the ladder across him. He went to the top rope, did a splash, and picked up the win.
Yeah. And the entire face locker room comes out and celebrates with him.
Yes. And Cactus Jack too.
And Cactus Jack, that's right, yeah. So yeah, he only held it for about a month and change. After that, there was a three-way dance between Sandman, him, and Austin, Steve Austin, who was doing those promos at the time, and ended up losing it there. But yeah, I mean, he was sort of the very, it was kind of like a gift to the fans to have sort of the guy who personifies them win the title. So people were pretty surprised that happened. Number eight. Bob Backlund.
So Bob Backlund. Of course, he was a former WWF champion.
Yeah, this is not like when. Well, this was still WWF.
Yeah, this is like in the late 70s, early 80s. He was a prominent.
He was actually a champion.
Yeah, he made was sense one of the top names in WWF.
Yeah, but by the time 1994 came around,
he was not
correct.
He had not been in WWF.
He
for
was
a while.
45.
Yeah, 45 or so. He was in a feud with Bret Hart, who at the time was WWF champion. And they had a match at Survivor Series 94. It was a submission match. Here's kind of the interesting part about how this match worked. It wasn't as if... Because you go back to submission matches and you think Stone Cold Bret Hart at WrestleMania 13.
Sure, yeah.
That was a submission match.
Yeah.
Where the two people in the match would have to give up to lose. But that was not the case in this match. Each competitor had someone in their corner. Mm-hmm. Bret had the British Bulldog.
Mm-hmm.
Backlund had Bret's brother, Owen Hart.
Mm-hmm.
And so to win the match... you had to put a submission move on your opponent, and their corner person would have to throw in the towel.
Yeah.
So that was how the match was constructed. So it's a long match, I think like 35 minutes long. I feel like the last half of it is Bret Hart in the chicken wing.
I feel like come November, we're going to be doing this for our bad pay-per-view review show.
Could be. There's a lot of Survivor Series to choose from.
We fired this thing up to rewatch this match. And like you get all the different Survivor Series teams like revving each other up.
Yeah.
And like one of them was like Team Luger. And it was Luger, Mabel, Adam Bomb, I think.
Oh, I think it was Crush.
Oh, it was Crush. Hold on. Wasn't Crush and Adam Bomb the same person?
No, they're two different people. Because they're both in Chronic later on.
Okay. And then and the Smoking Guns.
Yeah. And then Team Luger. HBK also had his own team of himself, Diesel.
Which immediately, it's a stacked team.
Well, then there's also Jeff Jarrett on that team.
We'll talk about that in November.
Yeah. So anyways,
but yeah, let's get back to this 35-minute match.
This match is super long. I feel like the last half of it was Backlund Backlund had Brett in the crossface.
They were spooning on the floor of the mat for the longest time.
It felt like at least 10 minutes.
The longest time.
So
at some point, like 10 minutes prior, Bulldog got knocked out.
Yeah, he got KO'd.
So for the duration of him getting KO'd and the end of the match, he was out on the floor.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly.
There wasn't a concussion protocol back in 94, man.
Okay, but here's the thing. Even if there wasn't a concussion protocol, the fact that nobody really took notice and then tried to help him for that long a time if somebody's out cold, that's not natural for somebody to be knocked out.
I agree.
That's like death status right there. That's like this guy just got knocked into a coma. You should immediately begin emergency procedures.
Agreed. But this is professional wrestling. So anyways, with Bulldog knocked out on the floor, Owen goes to the ringside area where Stu and...
Mama Hart.
Yeah. Is it Helen?
Mrs. Helen sounds right.
Helen Hart. I'll say that. I think I read that. Helen Hart. Mrs. Hart.
Susan Hart.
We'll say Mrs. Hart. We're sitting ringside, and Owen starts pleading with
Brett's mom,
specifically, yeah, their mother, to throw in the towel on Brett's behalf because you know, now suddenly Owen is his conscience is
eating
is,
away at him.
Yeah, because his
That's
brother,
my brother
is there.
That's my brother
in the cross-face chicken wing for at least 15 minutes.
And I'll tell you what, Owen did a hell. I love Owen. Owen did a hell of a job acting this out. Selling it. It was fantastic. I thought Owen was like the most entertaining segment about this.
So Mrs. Hart, you know, she's conflicted. She wants to help her son.
Correct.
Same time, Stu's like, nope.
Stu's like, no, we don't do that in this family.
Nope.
We don't do that. You deal with it. You deal with the pain.
Yeah. Brett, if you're such a great wrestler, get out of the hold.
That's Stu Hart's controversial opinion is the same as ours.
Brett's an over. So eventually Owen pleads enough that his mother throws in the towel.
Yeah.
And Bob Backlund is your new WWF champ at the age of 45.
Now I couldn't tell. It was very surprising. He held the belt for 3 days.
Yes. Before losing it at a house show at Madison Square Garden to Diesel.
In a match that lasted how long?
8 seconds. Right. I think it was a kick and a powerbomb and a three count.
Yeah. It was eight. It would have been like 4 seconds if it was like Scott Hall, you know, but it was Diesel, so he's slow.
It would have been 3 seconds if it was HBK because it's super kick pin.
Super kick pin, exactly. But what was funny is that the crowds were right. Number one, the WWF title changed hands mid-show. So this was like, this was not the main event. The main event was Yokozuna versus Undertaker, which I'm sure was another.
It was a casket match or something.
Match, exactly. And Chuck Norris was there to enforce things. And if you have Chuck Norris in a match, obviously it's going to be the main event. This was like held in the middle of the mat, in the middle of the card. So that's kind of where you see how they treated the WWF title at the time. It was sub Yoko Undertaker, Chuck Norris. It was sub like best Survivor team, Survivor Series team. It was underneath all those. This was, I think, after the Doink and Lawler match. Because the Doink had his team of little people wrestlers. Lawler had his own team of little people wrestlers. And they fought. And then Doink put a pie in the face of Lawler, which naturally led to the WWF World title match after that. There was still like a lot of show left. This was a 35-minute match. The crowd seemed completely apathetic towards this.
They were chanting for Brett to get out of the hold at one point.
Oh, were they? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, the finish... I think first was bewilderment until they started to present the belt to Backlund, and then there was booze.
Yeah. I'm like, this is BS. But yeah, it was very underwhelming, as much of a lot of wrestling was in 1994.
Yeah, but at the time, you know, even still thinking about it in hindsight, having Backlund at 45 years old, who hadn't been in WWF for a while, coming in and defeating your top guy for the belt is a pretty huge surprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it also speaks to how much of a top guy Bret Hart really was. But that's a controversial opinion for another day.
Another time.
Number seven.
Seven.
Chris Jericho beats Triple H on Raw.
So this is on the April 17th, 2000 episode of Raw.
It was either April 7th or April 17th. Wikipedia said 17th, and the WWE video playback of this said the 7th.
Well, I'm going to trust WWE.
All right. So this happened on April 7th, 2000. And so
this opened the show, right?
Yeah. Jericho was white hot. he was white. This is about a year or so after his debut. He was white hot. And this was back when like anything could happen on Raw.
Yeah.
Like anything could happen on. There was a lot of title changes on Raw.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of them. But anyways, Jericho challenged Triple H, I guess. I forget what the setup was exactly. But anyways, Triple H bit. Jericho ended up beating Triple H. Earl Hebner did do a quick three count. And I think this was during the very extended period of time when Triple H and Earl Hebner had kind of a side feud going. Because Triple H would always be on Earl Hebner's case.
Interesting.
And Earl Hebner would always be yelling at him. And that played into a couple matches throughout like a three-year time period. It was weird. But in any event, later, so Jericho won the title, basically hightailed it out of there, ran out of there.
Yeah.
Triple H got up and he started freaking out. The crowd was going crazy. It was just, that was the great thing about Raw back then. They had all those moments of pandemonium where, oh my God, what just happened? The crowd's going crazy and people are freaking out.
Yeah.
That happened a lot on Raw.
Yeah.
And so Triple H, I think they came back from like commercial or maybe it was in like a couple segments later. I forget. But anyways, he bullied Earl. He said, Earl, get down here. And he bullied him into reversing the decision. He showed the tape back and he says, that was a really fast count. You know it was. And so he made Jericho come back out and he took the championship back from him. And it was one of those things that even, so I was like a big Triple H guy back then.
Yeah.
Even that, like that broke me. I was like, oh, that's the most heel crap ever. I'm so upset right now.
Yeah.
But it, looking back on it, it was like, oh my God, that's like the coolest thing a heel can do.
Is I know.
Bully his way back into having
being
a title.
Champion.
Yeah, exactly. Don't touch my feet.
Sorry.
Jericho did go on to legitimately win the Undisputed Championship by beating Rock and Stone Cold in the same night at Vengeance 2001, so like a year later.
Yeah.
But at the time, he was sort of a heel. I don't think people really wanted Jericho to be a heel. It wasn't like when he was a really good heel.
Yeah.
It was like, it was just a poorly booked, I think, cowardly heel type thing.
Mm.
And I remember watching his, when he won that. I mean, hell, that actually could have been on this list because he won the Undisputed Championship by beating The Rock and Stone Cold. And not a lot of people, I think, expected that to happen. And then his run really wasn't all that great.
Yeah.
Like, I remember seeing him come out maybe when he lost it to Triple H, or maybe it was just one of the times when he was actually champion, and just people did not seem to be into it. He wasn't getting like a lot of heel heat.
Yeah.
It was just people were not into it that much. So that wasn't like the best. But it's always cool to say, hey, you know what? It wasn't The Rock. It wasn't Stone Cold. It wasn't Triple H who was the first Undisputed Championship.
It wasn't Kurt Angle.
Yeah, it was Chris Jericho. So that's always cool because we love Chris Jericho.
We do.
Number six.
Six.
Mankind. He won the title on Raw.
Yeah, so this was the same night as the infamous Finger Poke of Doom.
December 29th.
January 4th, 1999.
Well, it was taped on the 29th.
Yes, and that's how WCW knew the results of the match because it was pre-taped.
Correct.
And so they spoiled the finish of this match live on air.
Yeah.
Classy
Eric Bischoff.
I know. When Tony Schiavone, as you said, with Eric Bischoff, telling him to say this, told people what the outcome of the match was, but apparently it didn't work in WCW's favor because over 500,000 people turned the channel from Nitro to Raw to see Mick Foley win his first world title.
Yeah, man. People like Mankind.
Yeah. They do.
Oh, man. Yeah. This is, again, one of those pandemonium moments where he won it thanks to help from number one DX, number two, Stone Cold.
Yeah, who gave The Rock a stunner.
Right. But of course, that led to like a really, really great feud between The Rock and Mankind. He actually lost it, not even a month later at the Royal Rumble. When's the Rumble? The Rumble's at the end of January?
Yeah, so less than a month later. But then the Mankind won it back, I think at the Empty Arena match.
The Empty Arena match, yeah.
And then Rock won it again. So at the beginning of the night, Mankind had a match against Triple H. With Shane McMahon as the guest referee.
Mm-hmm.
Shane cost Foley the match. So Triple H wins. But then Triple H pedigrees Shane, and then Mick puts Shane in like a submission hold and demands a title shot later that night and threatens to break Shane's arm, I believe.
Yeah, that's what happened, yeah.
And then so Vince gives him the match, no disqualification. So we have this match as a main event, and as you mentioned, it's like overbooked, but it's wonderfully overbooked.
Yeah, exactly. And so, the crowd was just eating it up. The crowd was insane for this.
Yes. It was great.
No, it was fantastic. I remember watching this live. It was fantastic. And yeah, it was like, and then it's like you flip over to WCW.
And you get that ridiculous garbage that's going on there. I remember watching that too. But here in California, we'd get Nitro from 5 to 8, mm-hmm. and we could turn over to Raw right afterwards mm-hmm. because Nitro would always end at 8 because they had to play Robin Hood or whatever the show on was on afterwards.
Yeah.
And so we could just turn right to Raw and we get all 5 hours of wrestling in a row. We didn't
have
to worry
about
it.
That was so much fun, man. We'd go hang out at Jeff's and watch it or Nathan watch it.
Yeah.
That was so much fun.
So we get to watch all that. So you watch the finger poke of doom. You hear Shivani talk about stuff, and you're like, what?
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, this is stupid. Yeah. Why are they ending a show this way? This is really stupid. Yeah. And you watch Raw, and it's like two vibrant, exciting hours of wrestling, and it ends in such a euphoric moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Not another.
At that point,
Sting's in the rafters. We're going to Robin Hood.
Yeah, I know. At that point, WCW is like, okay, I'm watching just to see how bad it could get.
Yeah, I know. I know exactly. Like, or I mean, for me, it was kind of like always, well, is this ever going to get better? Like, can they do some cool, shocking stuff? But all their shocking stuff was just crap. Number five.
Five.
Andre the Giant beats Hulk Hogan, brother.
So this was on Saturday Night Main Event, February 5th, 1988. I remember watching this when it happened.
Yeah, you've told me this before.
Yes. Well, we've talked about this match before on other episodes. So it was a match.
I always get confused with all these. So there was Hogan beating Andre at WrestleMania 3. Did this predate that?
No, this is afterwards.
This is after that?
Yes.
Okay.
So this match was for the WWF Championship,
okay.
which Hogan at this point had had for like 4 years.
Okay.
He had it forever.
All right.
And this was during the time when Andre aligned himself with the $1 Million Man, Ted DiBiase.
Okay, right.
And so,
long after WrestleMania 3 was this?
WrestleMania 3 was 87.
87.
So almost a year.
Okay, all right.
So
there had probably been like two story beats in that year.
Probably. I know stories moved much slower back then.
They really did.
So this is the match with the twin referees.
Oh, yeah, Dave
and Earl Hebner.
Yeah.
So one of them was Dave, I believe, mm-hmm. was a referee during the actual match.
Yeah, yeah.
Counted
yeah.
the pinfall, when even though Hogan like kicked out at 3 or something like that.
Right.
But still counted as a win, gave Andre the belt, and this is when Andre gave the belt to DiBiase.
Right.
Because DiBiase effectively bought the belt.
He had a lot of money.
Yes.
He was a million dollar man. Right.
I think Hogan around this time was going to go and shoot No Holds Barred.
Oh, okay.
So he needed to take a break from television.
Right.
So this is a storyline they put in place. Of course, Jack Tunney stripped DiBiase of the belt because he didn't win it. He bought it.
Right, yeah.
And so they set up
This isn't eBay. This is the WWF.
Exactly. So they set up a tournament, declare a new WWF champion at WrestleMania 4,
mm-hmm.
which Macho Man won.
Oh, yeah.
With the help from Hogan.
Oh, yeah.
Shoot
your movie, yeah.
You know, at this point, after 4 years, Hogan seemed basically unbeatable.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So it was pretty darn surprising, mm-hmm. even Andre, you know, who is a legend in the industry, to have him beat Hogan for mm-hmm. the belt on network television.
Now, this was it had the twin refs. Was it also like Hogan had kind of like one shoulder up?
It wasn't a clean count. He kicked out.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got you. Okay. Friggin' Hogan. You can't just take a friggin' loss. I'm the man.
But I remember watching this and thinking it was crazy that Hogan lost.
Yeah.
That was just a shocking thing. And if you're a wrestling fan, you know, back then, and Hogan lost, you're like, what?
What the heck is that?
That never happened.
Well, they saved that for NBC primetime television.
They did.
Right there, yeah. Number four.
Four.
Ron Simmons beats Vader.
So this took place on August 2nd, 1992, at a show in Baltimore, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Originally advertised was Sting to take on Vader
mm-hmm.
for the WCW World Heavyweight Championship. But then during the course of the show, he was injured.
Quote, unquote.
Yes, by Jake the Snake Roberts.
Fake injured.
Yeah. Yes. And then after that, Bill Watts, who was in charge of running WCW at the time, had a drawing.
A random selection.
Yeah, to find a new opponent for Vader.
Yeah.
And Ron Simmons was selected for that spot.
I wonder if RoboCop's name was in the drawing.
This is 2 years after RoboCop was in WCW.
There you go. So he might have still been under contract. He's like a super part-timer like Brock Lesnar.
I'm pretty sure that was just by appearance fee.
When did RoboCop 3 come out? Because they could have done another thing. This could have been RoboCop, but instead it was Ron Simmons. Fortunately for Ron Simmons, his name was chosen. And they had a match. And, man, A, crowd was super behind Ron Simmons. Big time. B, when he won, they went crazy.
Yeah.
They went absolutely crazy. Now, what's kind of interesting is that so we looked at it like a shoot interview with Ron Simmons, and they said, so why did they decide to put the belt on you that night? Because usually, you know, usually there's reasons for these things. WCW kind of never cared, evidently never really cared about reasons. And so he said, I have no idea.
And he wasn't told he was going to win the title until he showed up that day at the arena.
Right, exactly. If you get a chance to watch it, it is actually really a joy to watch.
Yes.
Because number one, it is actually Ron Simmons was really fast. Like, he was a really fast power wrestler back then.
Yeah, athletic too.
Yeah, he was a very athletic power wrestler. Vader, for his size, fairly athletic dude.
I mean,
he used to moonsaults and shit.
Yeah.
So, so to watch the finish of this, and see the crowd's reaction, but then the face locker room comes down, but the locker room the guys that came down, Ron Simmons must have been loved in that locker room, because there is legit. It's one thing for, like, when Luger beat Yokozuna at WrestleMania 10. You can tell those guys had to have their arms twisted to go out there and celebrate with Lex Luger.
Yeah.
None of them really seemed to care much.
No.
You could see every single one of them. And I know there's, like, probably a Wyndham in there.
Yeah, Barry Wyndham was in there. Pillman.
Brian Pillman was there.
Tom Zank
was there. The Z-Man was there. They all seem legitimate. Oh, Dustin Runnels.
Oh, yeah.
Goldust was there.
Yeah.
They all seem legitimately, overwhelmingly ecstatic for this guy.
Yes.
They're like grabbing him, putting the title on him, like holding his head. Like, they are going ballistic for him. They're going as ballistic as the crowd is, and the crowd is going ballistic for him. And he was so emotional over it.
Yeah.
This was a massive moment. First African American world champion. And, man, it was just a legitimate moment of pure joy.
Yes.
And it makes you wonder. It makes you wonder what the reason, if it was because, hey, you know what? What a great moment. Let's make some history here. Because I think at the time, 92 was around the time, like, Flair, Brett.
At the time.
Who's the champ at the time?
And Randy Savage was WWF champ.
Randy was world champion at the time. Wait, so that was when Savage, was that his, like, second title run?
Or third.
Okay. Oh, yeah, okay.
I think it was his last in WWF.
So maybe it was just, hey, let's try to make some waves. Let's try to make some noise. They're based in Atlanta. Obviously, that's a heavy, you know, African-American community there. Whatever the reason was, it made for a great moment.
Oh, a fantastic moment.
And he was champion for 5 months.
About, yeah.
It wasn't like the greatest title run or anything. He ended up losing it back to Vader December 30th, 92.
Yeah.
But, you know, surely, you know, down the line, especially with how much he accomplished after the fact, you know, his legendary tag team with Bradshaw.
Yeah.
And you know, as Farouk as a singles competitor, he also, during the Attitude Era, you know, had a lot. Well, yeah, he was Farouk for the tag run too.
Yeah.
But it's always great to look back on that. And that is a prestigious moment in wrestling history.
Absolutely.
Right there. So it was kind of cool.
Very cool.
Damn. Number three.
Three.
The Montreal Screwjob.
We've talked about this, this match a lot.
Oh, it's so fun to talk about.
Oh, I know.
It's so fun to watch.
Let's think of a different angle to take on it. So we all know what happened. Brett was about to leave WCW, but Vince didn't want him leaving with the WWF world title. So there, he was presented with several scenarios by which he would drop the belt before going to WCW.
He said no.
Well, Brett didn't want to lose in Canada.
No.
That was his thing. He just didn't want to lose in Canada.
It would be like assassinating my character.
Yeah, that's what he said.
The Hitman character.
Brett takes his character too seriously.
Yeah, he does.
So to make sure that Brett didn't show up on Nitro with the WWF title, Vince, Shawn Michaels, Triple H, and who else is in that meeting?
Patterson or Briscoe? I think Patterson. Yeah. Or Slaughter?
I remember. There was another WWF executive back there. Devised a plan by which they could get the belt off Brett. So this happened at Survivor Series 97 in Montreal, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
There was a spot where HBK was supposed to put Brett in the sharpshooter. Mm-hmm. Brett was supposed to reverse. The match was going to continue. Oh, Hebner knew in advance.
Yeah.
But what happened was while Brett was in the sharpshooter, before he had a chance to reverse, Hebner called for the bell, awarding the match to Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
So Brett legit pissed.
Oh, big time.
Because he didn't know.
Oh, unhappy.
Shawn Michaels did a really good job of acting pissed.
Yeah. Acting like he didn't know.
He knew. But he did a really good job selling like he didn't.
Yeah. From what I was able to gather, it seems like Triple H was the guy who sort of broached the subject of...
Okay, yeah, because I think he tells a story where they're all sitting in the room and it's quiet, and he says something like, well, let me just take the belt off him.
Yeah.
Just matter-of-factly like that.
Dad, let's take the belt. Why'd you call me Dad?
Did he say if he's not going to play ball or something like that?
Sounds like it, yeah. I thought it was a phone conversation. Maybe they're all in the room. I don't know. Anyways. He's not going to play ball. Let's take the belt off him.
So after the match, Bret Hart spits in Vince McMahon's face.
That was gross.
Destroys like the entire commentary booth, goes backstage, knocks out Vince.
It created a magnificent moment, though. It is truly bizarre to watch this.
I was a really casual WWF observer at this point until I didn't watch the pay-per-view, but I heard about it. I was like, oh, wow, that's messed up.
Yeah.
How are they going to handle this? And so the next night on Raw, they had
so hold on a second. Wait a second.
Interview with Vince where Mr. McMahon was born.
Yeah. Wait, so you had heard about it?
Yeah.
How did you remember how you heard about it?
I read about it somewhere, I think.
Because I didn't get into stuff until after the Montreal Screwjob, so I sort of retroactively was like, who's this Bret Hart guy and why does he look depressed all the time when he was in WCW? I was like, oh, cool, everybody's making a big deal about Bret Hart. Let's see this guy. Why does he look so sad? And then,
even at his peak, he never really looked that happy.
That's true, he didn't.
He's always very serious.
He's always very serious. Relax, Brett. Oh, you know. But of course, there's that fantastic documentary, Wrestling with Shadows.
Yes.
Hitman Hart.
That just happened to follow him during this entire
crazy
process of him negotiating with WCW, this whole screw job. I mean, the cameras are backstage after Vince stumbles out of his locker room after getting knocked out by Brett.
My favorite part is when I think it's like Brett's wife is like running down Triple H. Don't tell me you didn't know about this, Hunter. You knew about it.
Yeah.
He was like, no, I promise I didn't know about it. I didn't know about it. He's got that cheesy polo shirt on because he was still kind of the effete, you know, French guy.
He was the Connecticut Blue Blood.
Thank you. Yeah, Connecticut Blue Blood. Yeah, he was the French guy in WCW.
Yeah.
Anyways, that was a lot of fun. I always love talking. That's the most joyful moment in wrestling for me. You know what? It's not real, Brett. It was like, you know, I told Vince, you know, I said it'd be like assassinating my character. It'd be like shooting me in the head in Canada, you know, in front of all my fans. You know what?
See, I'm surprised he didn't look at that as an inverse. Book it so DX essentially... Storyline-wise, screws him out of the title.
Yeah.
That's a huge face thing.
They'll follow you anywhere you go.
I know. If you get screwed storyline-wise out of the title, you're going to get a lot of face heat.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't understand why.
Just got to roll with it, man.
Yep.
It's a business.
It is a business.
Anyways, number two.
Two.
David Arquette.
So this is a tag team match, right? That happened on Thunder. Yeah.
This is surprising to say the least.
I know that.
There are so many things that are surprising here.
So the match was Double J, Jeff Jarrett, and Eric Bischoff against DDP and Arquette. DDP was a champion at the time.
Was this the main event?
I can't even answer that question.
Or was it Goldberg versus Norman Smiley then?
I guess Kimberly, DDP's wife, was referee, but Mickey J, longtime WCW ref, was a secondary ref.
Now, Kimberly ended up real life with Jeff Jarrett, right?
No, you always get that wrong. It's Karen Engel, Kurt Angle's ex-wife.
Right. But DDP and Kimberly are not an item anymore.
No.
I wonder what happened.
They've been divorced for a while.
Okay.
So it was a situation where it was a tag match, but whoever scored the pinfall win would be the new champion.
Yeah.
And so of course, this is when Vince Russo was booking WCW.
Yeah, this is Vince. This is all Vince Russo.
Oh, yeah. You know, he claims that it was Tony Schiavone's idea about Arquette winning the title. And then Russo just did this to kind of pop ratings.
What are the odds that
David Arquette got on the cover of USA Today And they're, this match was trying to promote that movie Ready to Rumble, even the movie had already been out at this
point. So once again, this was a licensing deal, sort of an informal licensing deal between WCW and then like another, like a movie.
And I think 2 weeks later, during the movie's run, 2 weeks after this match, the movie's still in theaters and it got a slight bump.
Yeah. Well, like when he lost the title, I think.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Like that.
At Slamboree, which happened, 12 days later.
People were tired. People were no longer sick of they were no longer disgusted by WCW. So like, oh, I'll go watch that movie. He's not champ anymore.
But it was a situation. The match was where.
What do you think? Let me ask you. What do you think the odds are that Tony Schiavone was trolling Vince Russo when he brought that up?
Oh, he might have been.
At the very least, is joking around. Hey, you should put that on David Arquette.
You know, if David Arquette's in the match, you just put the title on him, right? Yeah, bro.
Hey, bro. What a great idea, bro.
That'll pop ratings.
He'll be on the cover of USA Today, bro. So everybody in a hotel room can maybe see him.
In the upper, left corner, something like that, of the front page?
Exactly. My eggs are here. Who's that idiot? Anyways, I don't know. I'm nuking Russia.
The finish saw a double pin, if I remember correctly, where who did Arquette pin? Bischoff, I'm sure?
I don't know, man.
And then, but the ref only counted that pinfall, and so Arquette was awarded the belt.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a double count. Yeah, no, saw that one. Yeah, double pin.
But didn't DDP and Arquette celebrate afterwards?
Yeah.
Why would DDP celebrate? He just lost the title.
Well, because he was his tag team partner.
But he lost the title.
Yeah, but he knew that I wasn't real. He knew that he can, like, probably take it off him if he wanted to.
But he didn't, because at Slamboree, Arquette swerved DDP, Jeff Jarrett was a champion.
DDP doesn't seem like the kind of guy who has that much foresight. He's good at yoga, though.
He is.
he's just a good guy.
He's a good motivational speaker,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's good for that kid. I just love that when they told DDP, DDP said this, when they told him the finish of the match, he thought they were joking. He said, what? All right, man. Could you imagine? What a shit show. Could you imagine working there? God, and nobody knows. God, that's just...
No, thank you.
I mean, it's bad enough you hear about, like, WWE, their, like, writers' turnaround is, like, 3 months. Like, the average writers is there for 3. Because it's just got to be frustrating. Like, okay, so, man, Vince doesn't want Jinder to win now? Is that solid? Yeah, no, it's solid. Okay, so we can write this now.
2 hours before the show.
Okay. Hey, Steve Larson.
Yes, Vince.
I'm making a change. Jinder's going over. And then tomorrow you're going to have a big Indian celebration.
Okay, Vince.
Jinder goes over. Book it.
All right, Vince.
Fuck, we got 2 hours. Oh, God, this is so annoying. I just want to go back and do comic books. Anyways. So Arquette, how long did he have the title for?
12 days. 12 days.
Okay, lost at a Slamboree 2000 in a trip. Oh, yeah, and then three cages on top of each other.
Yeah. Those matches always go well.
Yeah, those were great. And Double J, he turned on DDP. Double J ended up with the belt. Did somebody get hit with a guitar in that match?
Yeah, I think Arquette hit the DDP with guitar.
Of course they did. Of course it did.
See, this one, Arquette winning was a surprise by the time Russo had won it.
Oh, yeah.
In a way, it just made sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it was an inevitability at that point.
At that point, it seemed like it was inevitable that it was going,
like,
to happen.
Oh, that's going to happen. He's going to have a stupid sleeveless shirt tucked into his...
No, that's when he had the football helmet on and pads.
Oh, God.
And he still got concussed.
Oh, man. It was just another week of TV. That's how he put
it.
Anyways. Number one. Ivan Koloff beats Bruno Sammartino.
I believe this was... this. Show, or the end of it, was known as The Night the Garden Went Silent.
Yeah, man.
Madison Square Garden.
Now, there is some very grainy Zabruder-esque film of this happening.
Yes.
But I don't believe there's any audio to this.
I don't think so.
There's, one actually really well done. Somebody on YouTube, put their own commentary on it. And I don't know if their equipment is just crap or if it sounded like it was of the era. It actually sounds like it's of the era. And I was like... This sounds pretty subdued enough to be of the era. Like, everything's so no-sold back then.
Yeah.
And I Ivan Koloff, that's back to Bruno.
At this point, Bruno had been champ for almost 8 years. From May of 1963.
Unbelievable.
And this match took place on January 18th, 1971.
Bruno has a really good rundown of like sort of his career on the Legends with JBL. Yeah. I always recommend it. It's amazing.
Did he talk about what is exactly what his schedule was like back then? Was
I'm
like,
almost positive he said it's as crazy as we. I thought he's the one who said
8 matches a week, stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, six matches a week and 2 on Sunday.
That's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely insane. And literally the only reason. They had him lose to Ivan Koloff is because he said, I need a break. 8 years. Yeah, he needs a break.
Yeah.
Of course he does.
Yes, he does.
Anyways.
So if I remember correctly, it was Koloff who finished the match with a knee
mm-hmm.
of some sort. And mm-hmm. then pinfall was counted. And then, you know, everybody just went silent, gasped.
It'd be like when Lesnar beat Undertaker,
yeah.
but like a lot more.
Yeah.
You know, like people like.
So I talk about it.
That one dude with like his eyes all bulging out.
The Hogan Andre match where Hogan hadn't lost in 4 years.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Bruno hadn't lost in almost 8.
Yeah.
So, shocking.
Yeah, double it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Almost double.
Yeah. That's crazy.
But then, so Koloff won the belt. But he only had it for 3 weeks.
Which again is kind of shocking.
And then lost it to Pedro Morales.
Right. And then Bruno got it again in December of 73, so about two years later. Yeah.
And they held it for 3 more years.
Yeah. Yeah. So that dude had it for like 11 years. Well, does he have the – he has longest for like total combined
I think he has the longest total combined reign, I think.
Okay, yeah. Wowie wow.
It's pretty crazy.
No, that is crazy. Bill Apter is quoted as saying it felt like they were at a funeral.
Is this here from some notes you have here?
I looked at Wikipedia notes.
Okay.
Yeah, during his time.
No, I was going for the finish of the match. So that after the pin that Koloff walked to the ref and the ref raised his hands 3 times. Announcer came in the ring with the title, but they didn't want any riots.
Yeah.
So no one actually gave the belt to
right,
Koloff.
Right.
Instead, he left the ring and Bruno remained in the ring. So I guess Koloff could walk out of the ring without a riot happening.
It sounds like a really freaky situation. An audience of, speculate, 15,000, 17,000?
Yeah, the Garden's a pretty good size arena.
Okay. That many people just, it'd be like, you know, that scene in The Birds when all the birds are just
yeah.
there. And they're all just staring at her.
Well, back then, too, you know, they didn't have the huge.
But these are people, not birds.
Huge, elaborate mm-hmm. sets.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
You know, so they only have the entryway, and, you know, every seat is probably filled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, there could be close to 20,000 people.
Yeah. So you're just, you win it, and everybody's just staring at you like, or they're crying at you.
Yeah.
Like, what do? You're just like, all right, I'm out of here. Like, there's nothing more terrifying than, like, silence. When you're in front of a big crowd, like, when we did the award, the old Inside Gaming Awards, like, that's kind of the one time we were in front of, like, a big, like,
we were
the focal point in front of a big crowd. Yeah. And there's, like, what, a couple hundred people there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's weird. I can't imagine what it would be like
yes.
in front of 20,000.
I know.
And just, like.
Who are that surprised?
Who are just shocked and weirded out. And you have no idea, like, any one guy can have a gun because they probably didn't check that stuff back then. Like, they didn't know.
I don't know.
Somebody have a gun, man. Saturday Night Special, a little tiny one.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. I learned that. Anyways. Yeah, so there you go. There are the 10 most surprising title changes in history. If you can think of any others.
World title victories.
World title victories.
World title.
World title. Let us know in the comments. And yeah, until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project
in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.